Constance Martin, the aristocrat who went on the run with her partner, convicted rapist Mark Gordon, were both sentenced yesterday to 14 years with an extension of 4 years for Gordon. Their disappearance, the desperate national manhunt for them and their young baby, was a case that gripped headlines and horrified communities. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And yesterday afternoon at the Old Bailey in London, Martin and Gordon were finally sentenced for their crimes by the judge, Mark Lucraft. The judge judged them equally culpable for causing the death of their baby daughter, Victoria, in a tent in South Downs in January 2023 by means of neglect, most likely as a result of preventable hypothermia. He criticised the couple for failing to make any genuine expression of remorse. Here's Mark Lucraft at that sentencing hearing.
Sentence. On gross negligence, manslaughter. In your case, Mark Gordon, there will be an extended sentence of imprisonment amounting to 18 years, with a custodial term of 14 years and an extension period of 4 years. In my judgment, Gordon, in your case, the dangerousness test is met. I've given consideration to the provisions of Section 285 of the Sentencing Act 2020 and whether the seriousness of the offence or the offence or one or more of the other offences associated with it was such as to justify the imposition of a sentence of imprisonment for life. However, I do not find it to be. There will be the extended sentence that I've passed upon you. Martin, in your case, as the dangerousness test is not met, there will be a determinate sentence, a sentence of 14 years imprisonment.
But who was Constance Martin before all of this? And how did the daughter of a wealthy, very well-connected family end up having four children taken from her, going into hiding, moving between safe houses, dodging CCTV, and carrying a newborn through freezing winter nights across the UK? And how did the story unravel from unrest to trial to yesterday's sentencing? Well, to help us make sense of all of this, I'm joined by journalist Vincent McAvaney, who was in Brighton on the morning that Constance Martin and Mark Gordon were caught in 2023 and reported on the subsequent court cases. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Vincent.
Hello.
You were following yesterday's proceedings closely. It was a very long sentencing hearing beset by delays and frustrations, much of it down to the antics of the couple. Will you bring us inside courtroom 8 yesterday at the Old Bailey and what happened?
Well, much like the two trials that these pair have been involved with, it was very complex. It was long. There are a lot of issues to deal with. There was a bit of disruption from the pair themselves. They at one point were passing notes back and forth to each other. They were reprimanded for that by the judge. But that is actually on the tamer end of what their courtroom behavior has been like. They didn't react when sentences were actually passed. They were both sentenced to 14 years for the death of their daughter, baby Victoria, with Mark Gordon himself on an additional 4 years suspension due to risks involving his behavior and demeanor. And so they were surprised, I think, a little bit that they didn't react. There was a moment where Constance Martin did try to sort of turn and say goodbye to Mark Gordon, but she was then led out of court. So a lengthy end, you know, the very complicating factors. They both have difficult pasts. You know, they have had challenges in their lives. And that was something that the reports that had been taken by experts that were trying to factor into the sentencing, how much, you know, what happened to them impacted on their behavior and whether or not that was mitigating or not. So quite a lengthy day in the court.
And the judge spoke repeatedly of, you know, the highest levels of culpability, the lack of remorse shown by the couple, the constant attempt throughout the trials by the couple to blame others and to evade detection. The prosecution had sought life imprisonment for both of them. Were they surprised, do you think, by the sentence that was ultimately handed down?
Well, I'm not sure if they were surprised, but, you know, there was a strong argument in favour of the conviction, and that was one that they won with the jury, I think somewhat comfortably, having sat in the trial and seen the sort of imagery of the conditions in which they were living. I myself was there on the morning in Brighton when they were arrested. I was in that allotment where they had been camping out while police officers desperately searched for the baby of Victoria, at that time not knowing if she was dead or alive. I can tell you, during the course of that winter, so this was February 2023, it had been an incredibly cold winter. It was freezing in that allotment as they were searching for her. And so the baby, as we heard repeatedly in the course of the trial, which was only, in the sort of thinnest of baby grow clothing, didn't have proper jacket, didn't have proper cot, all of the normal things that you would have bringing a child into the world and looking after them in those very delicate first few weeks, the couple did not possess. They were sort of simply carrying her around inside coats. There was a disregard there. So I think the prosecution were trying potentially to push for a lengthier sentence because, you know, this was their fifth child. The previous four had been taken off them. They have a very odd demeanor. They sort of don't really acknowledge what is going on around them and the gravity of what they have done. When you watch the police interviews with them being interviewed, you know, after they have been arrested, when the initial arrest, you know, Mark Gordon's more concerned not with his child, but with eating a sandwich that he's just bought.
Let me eat.
Right, at the moment
put the stuff down. We're going to put you in cuffs. Then we will talk about you eating.
Let me have my food.
Constance Martin, in one particular video where, you know, the police say to her that they have found the body and she's died, she knew full well that this had happened and she was hiding and pretending. And then as soon as they say, you know, well, we found the body, then to my mind, she sort of turns on a bit of a performance of guilt. She was previously trained as an actress, but, you know, she's not someone who's ever really shown real contrition for what she's done.
Is it your baby?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. So just to clarify, you just told me the baby that we found this evening.
Yeah.
Is your baby?
Yeah.
Great. Tell me about her, because this... Take your time. Constance. There's no rush, Constance. I can see it's very, very distressing for you. And you're physically upset now. All right? Oh, please, I really want you to take your time. There is no rush. No rush whatsoever.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back then to the beginning here, Vincent. Tell us more about Constance Martin. She had an aristocratic background and had real royal connections right up to the late Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah, that's right. I think her father was involved in sort of ceremonies involving Queen Elizabeth II. So there was that royal connection there. He was sort of like in a sort of page boy role, essentially, during some ceremonies. And they were incredibly wealthy. They had this huge country estate. They were sort of generational money. But the change happened, as we understand it, in the late 90s. Victoria's father sort of had some kind of, he claims, sort of spiritual awakening, and he sort of gave up and sold the family seat. There was a divorce in the family. It was all quite complicated. And during the course of the trial, we learned that, you know, Constance Martin had been quite rebellious as a teenager. And then there was this incident where she was sort of taken to a church in Nigeria with members of her family. It's alleged that she suffered quite a lot of abuse there. People who knew her saying that she came back as not quite the same woman who had gone out to that. And then we understand, you know, at some point in the 2010s, she met Mark Gordon and her life completely changed. She cut off contact with family, with friends. They had, as I say, four children before baby Victoria who died, all of whom were taken off them, and they sort of lived this very sort of vagabond life, and their obsession with each other maintains until this day.
She was privately educated in a college that I understand was costing £30,000 a year. She'd studied Arabic, journalism, as you mentioned there. She studied acting at one point. She had a very privileged lifestyle, notwithstanding the fact that her father had, as you say, had this moment of awakening and had left the family and had moved to Australia. The mother had remarried and appeared to have quite a stable upbringing.
Yes, that's right. But it does seem that it had an impact on her, on her behaviour. And really, I mean, it's so hard to, if I'm going to sort of tried to explain to you what they were like in court. I mean, I've covered court cases for the last 20 years. I have never seen behavior from defendants like this, particularly from co-accused, because, you know, there are legal teams that will advise their clients to maybe turn against their partner or their friend or whoever, you know, that's their co-accused. But I mean, you know, they sacked their own legal teams and they were totally in sync with each other. They greeted each other in the mornings when they were brought in court, you know, calling each other, you know, husband and wife, telling each other they loved them. At one point, you know, when it was Constance Martin's birthday, she came in and said, "Oh, have you not got me a present?" They were obsessed with each other to the point where they were sort of like, you know, there's this term that that's sort of developed online, NPCs, non-playable characters, which is something you hear the likes of Elon Musk using, where there's a sort of disregard from everyone else around them as if they're not real people, as if the situation they're in isn't real. And they just, the relationship between the two of them, and it was mutual, it was like a brainwashing of each other to the detriment of all those around them, including, tragically, baby Victoria.
You mentioned there that she did have this experience at this extreme evangelical church in Lagos in Nigeria. She seems to become a disciple of this church for an extended period of time. And I've seen reports online from friends who knew her said she did come back from that experience a completely changed person. And that's when she met Mark Gordon. What do we know of how they met, and what do we know about him and his background and the criminal offences he was convicted of?
Yeah, there's a bit of murkiness about how exactly they met, but it does seem like when she came back from Nigeria, potentially she was in a sort of vulnerable position. And there have been sort of talks about whether taking up with someone like Mark Gordon was a way of getting back on her own family. But, you know, Mark Gordon is a very troubled individual. He is a convicted rapist in America. He carried out a number of in-home attacks on people, very violent attacks, including sexual assault and rape in the United States, for which he was serving, I think, a 40-year sentence. But at the 20-year mark, he was deported back to Britain because of, he was originally, I think, from the UK, and then the family moved out to the United States at some point. So he is someone who has got a very violent past. He, in court, displayed a level of sort of arrogance, you know, getting rid of his own legal team, attempting to defend himself. There was a sort of level of unhingedness is the best way to describe it, about who he was, about he sort of disputed there being any kind of authority, whether that be medical, whether that be family services, whether that be courts or police, having any kind of authority over him, kept talking about Magna Carta and sort of going on very strange rants. So he is someone who is, you know, and we know from now the court case that he was even violent to Constance Martin as well during the course of their relationship. So he was a very dangerous in the end and difficult individual to come into her life.
I know his own mother had alleged that he himself had been abused when he was just a young child of about 4 years of age, and she had sought leniency from the judge in the US. But ultimately, as you say, he was sentenced to 40 years in prison. And he was so young at that point, wasn't he, Vincent McAvenny, that he ultimately spent his formative years in prison.
Yeah, he was only about 14 when all of this happened. So he spent the majority of his adolescence and then young adulthood in US prisons. But it had been not just one, I think it was two or potentially even three of these sort of very violent home invasions, which involved sexual abuse. And so that is why he had that length of term.
And Constance's relationship with him, as you mentioned, it effectively isolated her from her family. She seems to be categoric that she didn't want to have anything to do with her mother, her father, or indeed her three brothers, to the point that they had actually hired private detectives to try and trace her. Were they always concerned about her life and what had happened to her?
From the sounds of it, they were concerned about her welfare. And you know, from the outside, one of the very common signs that many people are aware of that someone has potentially entered into a relationship which involves domestic abuse, both physical and psychological, is that a domestic abuser will often try to take control of as many parts of a person's life as possible, and that includes their association, who they are friends with, and the contact that they have with their family and loved ones. And they will try to isolate them because it's much easier to exert control over an isolated person than it is not. And, you know, her own family might have said to her, you know, what is going on here? And it really intervened. But the pair went to elaborate lengths over many years to
avoid detection by authorities, to try to avoid her family, you know, giving fake names when they arrived at hospitals for the births of their various children. For instance, we heard at the trial when that was rumbled with, I think, their first child in November 2017. They're in a hospital in Wales. She was claiming to be Irish. There were suspicions cast over her identity and what was going on with the couple. And it got to the point where, you know, there was a violent altercation with Mark Gordon when the police were called, and they were sort of asking questions about the couple, their plans with the baby, and it ended in a sort of violent outburst where Mark Gordon assaulted police officers in the middle of this maternity ward. So they were willing to do whatever they could possibly do to sort of evade this sort of, as they would see it, the system, and trying to live off grid. Now, some of their paranoia, you know, particularly about what was going on in their final few weeks on the run with baby Victoria, things like the car fire, you know, there is no tangible evidence that, you know, some of the things that they claimed about that car being tampered with by the family or people really pursuing them, there was part of this that was delusion in the state that they were in.
Okay, so let's talk about their disappearance back in December 2022 and the authorities raising the alarm. What exactly sparked that search for them?
By this point, they were, you know, on the authorities' radar because they had had four children, all of whom had had to be taken into care because they weren't fit to look after them. As we understand it, they became pregnant once again with baby Victoria. They hid the pregnancy and then used money, which Constance Martin receives on a regular basis from her family, to then go on the run, staying at Airbnbs around the country, having a car which was, you know, filled with, at one point it went on fire, but before that it was filled with all kinds of objects and things like that. And so they were basically living this sort of vagabond lifestyle funded by the money that she still was getting from her family, essentially.
I know that I'd read somewhere that they'd found 30 mobile phones in that burnt out car that really alerted them to the fact that this couple were on the run. And the most significant thing that they found was evidence of a recent birth. They found a placenta in that car that went on fire on the 5th of January. And I suppose, given what we know about the four other children and the welfare concerns they had about them, it seems to have, I suppose, set in motion this manhunt, which took the police right across the country trying to find the couple and their newborn baby.
Yeah, that's right. And it's unclear. There was a little bit of suggestion in the court case from the prosecution. So we either think, you know, they kept going to ports. So they were in Liverpool and then they went into Sheffield and they went to various kind of coastal areas and then were coming inland. There was a suggestion in the prosecution. At one point they said to, you know, look below the waterline. Why were they going to these ports and then coming to other cities? Some people are seeing was maybe an allegation that they were involved, and especially with that number of mobile phones as well, there was some kind of potentially they were involved in drug trafficking. And that is what the couple were up to when they were making all these kind of long, elaborate journeys. The other suggestion, of course, is that they were trying to abscond from the country. They were trying to sort of, you know, slip onto a boat, perhaps, and get out of the UK. That was a suggestion as well. So, you know, the couple have not been the most cooperative in terms of what they have told. They have at all times sought to protect and sort of defend each other. As I say, this very odd obsession still with each other and wanting to you know, to ignore the facts of what they have done for the large part.
Yeah, I understand she did actually spend a couple of weeks in Ireland with two of her children at one point, but then ultimately returned to him and to the UK. I mean, there is so much CCTV evidence of them, as you say, literally crisscrossing the United Kingdom, trying to evade capture. How did they manage to do that, do you think, for so long, Vincent?
Well, I mean, they had funds. I mean, that's the key thing, is that she still had access to money from her family. You know, we're talking about tens of thousands of pounds. They had a vehicle and they were managing to, you know, stay in Airbnbs. And I think there are questions in the UK. And, you know, I know in other countries now, when you do check into an Airbnb, you have to have a form of ID validated. That is something that is done, you know, quite regularly on the continent. It's not something that you really have to do yet in the UK. That is essentially how they managed to do it. They had money and they were very determined.
In the case, the police actively sought help from amateur detectives. What role did the public and the media play in that manhunt back in January and February 2023?
Well, the police were very much wanting the public's help. They were circulating images and CCTV. They were putting the case out there because I think they were so worried about baby Victoria. And that's why they took the unusual decision of being so public in this kind of, you know, manhunt. And from my own experience, I was on shift for the BBC the night that they are arrested. And I've never had, you know, I've been a reporter for a long time. The reporting and police relationships in the UK, I've got to say, have become strained in recent years. It's mostly where I work in London. You deal with the Met. The Met aren't the lead police force of the UK. The sort of Met's media operation is not the most easy to deal with. They aren't very forthcoming. They're very defensive, and it's difficult to even to contact them at times, I have to say. Now, on the night in question, it was Sussex Police, which is the area that covers Brighton. And I was, you know, driving down to Brighton in the early hours of the morning to be up for BBC Breakfast to do the lives. And I can't remember the last time I ever got so much cooperation from the police. They were giving me all the details I needed. When we arrived, you know, we sort of set up basically on the border of the allotment site with the police searching around us, fully expecting that the police would tell us to move back, but they didn't. They wanted very much, because they didn't know if baby Victoria was alive or not, they wanted very much for people to wake up and see that this search was going on, because they wanted people to in the area in the South Downs and Brighton to be searching outhouses, to look out for any tents, to try and find the baby. And so they were incredibly cooperative on that morning, giving senior detectives to me for live interviews on TV. You know, they really did try everything they could with the public to try and help them to find these two.
I mean, they were eventually arrested on the 27th of February, 2023. They'd been on the run for 53 days. At that point, I understand a member of the public had spotted them trying to buy food. But when they were arrested, there was no sign of the baby. And they didn't cooperate in any way with the police, did they, in trying to help the police locate the baby or alert the police to what had ultimately happened to that baby? Where was baby Victoria eventually found?
Yeah, they didn't do that because baby Victoria had been dead for some time at this point, and they both were aware of that, and they were simply hiding it. So on the night they were arrested, they were walking back, as you say, from a store where they had bought food. If you watch the police body cam evidence of their arrest, they both seem to be in an altered state. I don't think it would be too much of a claim to say that they were potentially on some kind of substance, because they were, you know, they were sort of completely, sort of like zombie-like in a way, walking through the streets. She sort of starts calling him Daddy Bear when they're getting arrested, and they seem completely discombobulated.
You stop for a second. Stop for a while. I need to speak to you. Well, because potentially I think you may have been in national news. Right, you're running away from me. Put the stick down. Drop it now.
Why?
Put the stick down and I'll explain.
Alright.
Put the stick, let go of the stick. The stick in your hand.
Alright.
Let go of the stick.
Alright.
Let go of the stick.
Why?
Because at the moment, I'm potentially going to be a weapon. And if you're who I believe you might be, you might have quite a good reason to get away from me.
Put it down.
What?
Put the stick down.
What?
And then obviously they were taken to the police station. They were being questioned about what had happened. And they were sort of, you know, not playing ball. At that point, the police still thinking that potentially baby Victoria is alive. They wouldn't say anything about her. And ultimately, when she was found, we were shown incredibly graphic images in court. Her body was in a essentially a plastic shopping bag with rubbish piled on top of it. And the body was so badly decomposed that no forensic expert in the UK was able to accurately identify what had been the cause of death, whether it was exposure to the cold or potentially whether it had been suffocation because of the way that she was sleeping in this very thin tent that they had been living in. It wasn't sort of, you know, an all-weather type tent. It was a sort of very flimsy, thin tent that you might take to a music festival in the summer.
In their first trial, the jury failed to reach a verdict on manslaughter, but they did convict the pair on other charges that they had faced. There was, again, of course, this retrial in 2024. How was it different to the first, Vincent?
Well, the Rooney trial was really interesting because they were just focusing on this question of culpability for the death of baby Victoria. It's hard to explain. Both in the first trial and the second trial, the pair did everything they could to disrupt the court process. They were sort of trying to do everything they could to sort of even disrupt getting to court in the days, you know, saying that they were ill, claiming they hadn't had time to prepare, not wanting to come out of the cells, demanding a coffee be brought to them. Then you had the sort of rotation of legal teams with them both firing legal representatives, Mark Gordon ultimately representing himself, which then creates further delays. And you had sort of just disruptive behavior, them refusing to be cross-examined, for instance. And then the fact that with the jury in the second trial, at one point, Constance Martin yelled out about Mark Gordon's past convictions in the United States, thereby introducing that into the court herself. When Mark Gordon was asked about this, he denied any knowledge of this, which then led the prosecution to have to, even though, as the judge pointed out, he had admitted to this, these past offences in the United States, in past proceedings regarding the four children that had been taken off him, it led to this sort of expensive and delayed chase for records from the US, which had to be unsealed and sent to the UK in order for him to finally accept that he had even served those initial crimes, which he was still sort of saying, oh, it wasn't decided correctly. So the pair did everything they could to try to confuse the juries and to disrupt proceedings. And that's what made this trial, these trials so difficult.
It has raised questions, too, about feelings that might be there in protecting vulnerable children. And I know that is now a subject of a review. But I'm just wondering, after yesterday's sentencing, what people will take away from the trial of Constance Martin and Mark Gordon and the awful, sad, tragic death of their daughter, Victoria.
I do have some sympathy for the authorities. You know, these two were very difficult people who had means which enabled them to, more means than most people, even though there had been a change in Constance Martin's family standings, she had enough money to be able to live like this, avoid detection. And it's very hard for stressed and strained authorities. And the fact she'd hidden this pregnancy, whereas the authorities sort of became aware of the other pregnancies and then her four initial children were sort of removed from her and put into care. So they were actively going out of their way to try to hide this pregnancy and keep baby Victoria. So, you know, I think there isn't much of a clamour of, you know, it's the authorities that let this happen. They let them slip through the net. The authorities were very much working hand in hand with the police in grave concern over the welfare of this child during the course. I mean, I think looking, you know, it's attached so much attention because it's unusual, but because of Constance Martin's background and wealth. But it, ultimately, it, you know, for me, it comes down to a case of you can have all of the money and privilege in the world at the start of your life and all the education. But ultimately, it is down to the choices, you know, that she made. And yes, she does appear to have had slightly hard times with her family. But Mark Gordon was a dangerous individual. That is a common behavior in domestic violence situations. But she is someone who is educated and who had means. And yet she still was choosing to go back to this person. It's a very unusual case. But as I say, this sort of hold they had on each other, this very intense relationship that they had to the detriment of all others and to the sort of ignorance of the surroundings that they were in at all times, was very, very unusual.
And it ultimately led to the death of their baby. It really is ultimately just a very kind of sad and depressing case, I have to say. Vincent McAvaney, thank you so much for your time here on News Talk Daily today.
Thank you.
Well, that's it from today's News Talk Daily. Thanks for your company. We'll be back in your feeds again tomorrow morning with another edition. But until then, from me, Ciara Doherty, goodbye.